is Friday, July 12th, 2024. I'm Charlie Shine, and reading the front pages of the Hartford Courant and the New York Times with me today is Bill Murphy. We're going to start by taking a look at the front page of the New York Times, the pictures there, and then we're going to jump over to Bill and get a look at the pictures in the front page of the Courant and get our first story. So, in the upper left-hand side of the New York Times, we have a picture of President Biden standing right underneath a NATO sign, NATO OTAN sign, rather, in Washington. And that was yesterday. People closest to him are adamant that he will stay in the race. More on that as the broadcast rolls on. Right below the fold, we have a picture from Las Vegas, right by the iconic Las Vegas sign that says, "Welcome to fabulous Las Vegas." We've got people standing under umbrellas in the hot sunshine. "It's like being in front of an exhaust pipe," said a visitor to Las Vegas, where temperatures soared. Yes, we'll have more on that as we roll on through the broadcast. To the right of that story, we have a picture from showing Shelley Duvall in her younger days. That's from a picture starring her in Three Women from 1977. Unfortunately, she died yesterday. And we're going to have more on that as we continue with the broadcast as well. Thumbnail photos in the bottom of the page. We have a story from Diane's Drums and Songs. Activists of all ages are braving rising temperatures to protest companies that support fossil fuel projects. Actually, we'll be taking a closer look at that story a little bit later on. And from the business section, where sadly we're not going to be taking a look at anything this morning, but the thumbnail photo talking about free electric bus tests town in a tiny Wymore, Nebraska. A sleek new battery-powered school bus became a surrogate for far bigger issues. And the picture itself, you've got a photo of a kid on a bike rolling by, supposedly an electric school bus. Final photo from the weekend art section. Funny first lady on Broadway. "Oh, Mary," asked the immortal question. "Besides that, Miss Lincoln, how was the play?" Above Cole LaScola with other star Conrad Brickamora as they play Mary and Abraham Lincoln, and it shows them in a theater booth. And that's it for the pictures in the front page of the New York Times. Now we go over to Bill and get our first story after we hear about the pictures in the front page of the Courant. Hello, Bill.
Hello, Charlie. Two pictures, well, actually three. I'll do the smallest one first. It's a picture of a lady, a mother, Margot Parenti, and her son Nicholas, just the two of them. They have big smiles on their faces. The story is marathon running helps mom in grieving, and we are going to have a story about that after the weather. So the main pictures, they're both related. The headline is freshening up a place of respect, and respect is in big headline black letters. I'll read the caption. A memorial to all Vernon and Rockville veterans received some sprucing up Thursday with some trimming amid a rainy and warm season that has seen plants growing fast. In these photos, and this is actually they're pretty much about the same, a seasonal worker for the town of Vernon is freshening up the walkway in front of the Fox Hill Memorial Tower, beautiful stone tower, and he is using a leaf blower to clean up all the debris after he cut the weeds, it says. And the only other thing I can say is there are two flags flying near the tower. Now, one is an American flag. I cannot tell what the other one is. It's in the background. So those are the pictures on the front page of the Courant. We're going to go with our first story, and that'll be from the World and Nations section. From Jerusalem, the Israeli military acknowledged a string of errors in its response to the deadly Hamas attacks last October 7th, including slow response times and disorganization, as it released the results Thursday of its first investigation into failures during the assault that triggered the war in Gaza. The report focused on the border community of Be'eri, it's a B-E-E-R-I, where over 100 people were killed and more than 30 taken hostage by Hamas. It was among the hardest hit communities in the early morning attack, and it was the scene of one of the highest profile confrontations of October 7th, a standoff in which militants held a group of hostages inside a home. The army failed in its mission to protect the residents of Kibbutz Be'eri, the military's chief spokesman, Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari, said in a televised address. It is painful and difficult for me to say that. During the standoff, a tank fired at the home, raising concerns that the 13 hostages inside were killed by friendly fire. The military concluded that they were likely killed by Hamas militants, not Israeli shelling, although it was unclear how it reached that conclusion, and the report called for additional tests. The army said the kibbutz was overrun by about 340 Hamas fighters. Investigators determined that based on the information reviewed and to the best of their understanding, no civilians inside the building were harmed by tank shell fire, the report said, although it said two Israeli civilians were hit by shrapnel outside the building. One of those civilians died, according to the man's wife. The team determined that most of the hostages were likely murdered by the terrorists, the report said. The report also pointed to delays of several hours in the arrival of military forces and said forces waited outside the kibbutz into the afternoon. Residents were being killed, not understanding the severity of the situation. The situation is extremely grave and cannot occur, it said. The report praised the bravery of the Be'eri residents and the members of the kibbutz civilian rapid response team, saying it was crucial in stabilizing the defensive line during the first hours of combat. Charlie?
As millions watched, African intelligence routed the natural kind. From Seoul, Ali Sadol was the finest Go player of his generation when he suffered a decisive loss, defeated not by a human opponent, but by artificial intelligence. Mr. Lee was beaten by AlphaGo, an AI computer program developed by Google's DeepMind unit. The stunning upset in 2016 made headlines around the world and looked like a clear sign that artificial intelligence was entering a new, profoundly unsettling era. By besting Mr. Lee, an 8-time world champion revered for his intuitive and creative style of play, AlphaGo had solved one of computer science's greatest challenges, teaching itself the abstract strategy needed to win at Go, widely considered the world's most complex board game. "I'm very surprised because I've never thought I would lose," Mr. Lee said at the time in a post-match news conference. "I didn't know that AlphaGo would play such a perfect Go." But the implications of his loss went far beyond the game itself, in which two players compete for territory by placing black and white stones on a gridded board made up by 19 lines by 19 lines. AlphaGo's victory demonstrated the unbridled potential of AI to achieve superhuman mastery of skills once considered too complicated for machines. Mr. Lee, now 41, retired 3 years later, convinced that humans could no longer compete with computers at Go. Artificial intelligence, he said, had changed the very nature of a game that originated in China more than 2,500 years ago. "Losing to AI, in a sense, meant my entire world was collapsing," he said in a recent interview with the New York Times. As a society wrestles with what AI holds for humanity's future, Mr. Lee is now urging others to avoid being caught unprepared, as he was, and to become familiar with the technology now. He delivers lectures about AI, trying to give others the advance notice he wishes he'd received before his match. "I faced issues of AI early, but it will happen for others," Mr. Lee said recently at a community education fair in Seoul to a crowd of students and parents. "It may not be a happy ending." Since his loss, Mr. Lee has become an AI obsessive of sorts, following with rapt, if not uneasy, attention as artificial intelligence delivers one breakthrough after another. AI has helped chatbots carry on conversations almost indistinguishable from human interaction. It has solved problems that have confounded scientists for decades, like predicting protein shapes. It has blurred the lines of creativity, writing music, producing art, and generating videos. Mr. Lee is not a doomsayer. In his view, AI may replace some jobs, but it may create some, too. When considering AI's grasp of Go, he said it was important to remember that humans both created the game and designed the AI system that mastered it. What he worries about is that AI may change what humans value. People used to be in awe of creativity, originality, and innovation, he said, but since AI came, a lot of that has disappeared.
Thank you, Charlie. The story on the front page of The Current from Washington. President Joe Biden's ability to run for re-election faced crucial tests Thursday as he prepared for questions at a highly anticipated news conference and his team met privately with skeptical senators on Capitol Hill. More House Democrats called for him to exit the race, and he made a notable flub ahead of the news conference in announcing a compact that would bring together NATO countries to support Ukraine. He referred to Ukraine's leader, Volodymyr Zelensky, as President Putin to audible gasps in the room. He quickly returned to the microphone. President Putin, he's going to beat Putin, Biden said. Then he said, I'm so focused on beating Putin in an effort to explain the gaffe. I'm better, Zelensky replied. And to that, Biden said back, you're a hell of a lot better. The Biden campaign laid out what it sees as its path to keeping the White House in a new memo saying that winning the blue wall states of Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan is the clearest pathway to victory. And it declared no other Democrat would do better against Republican Donald Trump. Biden will head to Detroit on Friday. But Thursday was pivotal. Biden must show skeptics during his whirlwind day with world leaders at NATO and the evening news conference that he is up for another 4 years. Voters are watching and elected officials are deciding whether to press for another choice. It all comes as Democrats are facing an integral problem. Top donor supporters and key lawmakers are doubtful of Biden's abilities to carry on his reelection bid after his recent debate performance, but the hard-fighting 81-year-old president refuses to give up as he prepares to take on Trump in a rematch. There was also no indication that anyone else would outperform the president versus Trump, said the memo from campaign chair Jen O'Malley Dillon and campaign manager Julie Chavez Rodriguez that was obtained by the Associated Press. Charlie?
Body found on melting Peru peak after 22 years, two decades after Bill Stamfi went missing during an avalanche while climbing Peru's highest mountain. His daughter Jennifer Stamfi had more or less accepted that he was gone forever. Sometimes she still had dreams about him alive in Peru, amnesiac and unaware that he had a family in the United States. She knew that he hated the cold, so the idea of his being trapped in ice was unsettling. But she thought she had made her peace with the mountain keeping her father. Then, one Saturday last month, she got a call from her brother, Joseph Stamfi. He began, "Are you sitting down?" He told me that they found Dad, she said, and I said, "What?" A fellow American, Ryan Cooper, had tracked down Joseph Stamfi to tell him that he and a group of climbers had stumbled upon his father's body on a 22,000-foot peak in the Andes Range. As climate change helped melt the mountain's glaciers, Bill Stamfi's body emerged from the ice that had preserved it since he went missing during an expedition with two friends in 2002, the Peruvian police said on Tuesday. On June 27th, the climbers were descending Husacaran when they saw a dark shape that stood out against the snow. Mr. Cooper, 44, a personal trainer from Las Vegas, said in an interview on Tuesday, As they drew closer, they saw that it was a body curled in a defensive position like someone was trying to protect himself during an avalanche, he said. The body was completely exposed atop the ice, Mr. Cooper said. Not like the half of him was under the ice or anything. He was on top of the ice, he said. Judging by the outdated clothing and the mummified condition of the skin, Mr. Cooper said, it was clear that the body had been there for a really long time. In a fanny pack, they found a still-legible ID card and passport. Mr. Cooper and his brother, the only two Americans in the group, knew that they had to find and notify Mr. Stamfee's family, Cooper said. He still had his wedding ring on his finger, so I knew he was married, and I knew he probably had a family, and somebody was expecting him home at some point, and he didn't come home. It was by sheer coincidence that Mr. Cooper's group had stumbled upon the body. His group tried to make it to the summit, but turned around after determining that the conditions were too dangerous. On the way down, they took an older route that's rarely used now because of how the environment of the mountain had changed, he said. Mr. Cooper was initially deeply disappointed by failing to make it to the summit, he said, but after things worked out the way they did, I realized I wasn't meant to summit, he said. I was meant to find Bill. Before the group had even finished descending, Mr. Cooper contacted his wife in Los Angeles to help track down Mr. Stamfee's family. With the help of old newspaper articles, they began to piece together the story of his disappearance. 2 days after discovering the body, Mr. Cooper was on the phone with Joseph Stamfee, now 51. Bill.
Thank you, Charlie. This story on the front page of The Current. A new report paints a discouraging picture of Connecticut's competitiveness in attracting new businesses and residents when it comes to its taxes, placing it near the bottom when compared with states across the country. The Tax Foundation, a Washington, D.C.-based think tank, ranked Connecticut 47th overall on an index that analyzes how well states fare against each other in five major tax categories: corporate tax, individual income tax, sales tax, property tax, and unemployment insurance tax. Only California, New York, and New Jersey ranked lower. Connecticut's northern neighbor, Massachusetts, did fare much better, coming in at 46th. Connecticut is pretty low on our index, Audrey Shufkov, a senior policy analyst at the foundation, said. And unfortunately, it has traditionally been so because we believe Connecticut is not super competitive, neither among its geographic neighbors or nationally, Yushkov said. The foundation has been performing its analysis for more than two decades. In addition to an overall competitiveness ranking, each of the tax categories are also ranked by state. For Connecticut, property taxes and the individual income tax are the most problematic when it comes to the foundation's rankings, Yushkov said. The individual income tax comes in at 46th among all states, while property taxes are ranked dead last. As of January 1st, Connecticut did cut its individual income tax for the first time since the mid-1990s. The cuts are estimated to benefit about 1 million individual filing state income tax returns. Taxes have long been a subject of debate in Connecticut, with ideas pitched for increasing taxes, rats for the rich, phasing out the... No, I'm sorry, it says rats here, but I think they meant rates. They've got to spell R-A-T-S. Yeah. I think it was rates. Phasing out the car tax and looking for ways to make the overall tax burden more equitable. The January 1st tax cuts came in the two lowest rates. The 3% rate on the first $10,000 earned by single filers and the first $20,000 by joint filers dropped to 2%. In addition, the 5% rate on the next $40,000 by single filers and the next $80,000 by joint filers dropped to 4.5%.